I worked with the NSA through a grant that they have with Stanford University, and in that grant, none of us had clearance. So what the NSA would do is take their problems and make them into more abstract problems so that there was no specific information. In fact, sometimes that got in the way because we would ask a question and they would confer and say, we can't give you any more information about that. But we certainly got a sense of the kinds of problems that the NSA was dealing with.
And what was the sense that you got? I mean, what were the type of abstract situations that got thrown at you?
Well, it was pretty clear what kinds of problems it were. So they wouldn't say things like, we're looking for terrorists in Buffalo, New York. They would say that we have a huge database with lots of rows, and some of these rows, they really wanted to detect some of these rows, so they'd label them with a certain character. And they would go on to say that hundreds of millions of rows are fine, but we really want to find these rows. Basically, we're talking about is metadata kind of applications. So if you think about information about phone calls and emails, about networks of information, to numbers going to and from, duration of calls, etc. So what they wanted to know was, with this and other demographic information, could we identify rows of the database that were problematic? That was one type of problem. Another type of problem was simply, if you have a large network, can you detect when there are changes in the network that are going on? Can you detect when a hub is changing? So if the traffic is suddenly shifted from one hub to another. That sounds really simple, but I think what a lot of people don't realize is the enormity of this database that we're talking about. I've been a civil libertarian for a long time. I totally understand people's concerns, and I think it's great that so much light is being shed on this. But at the same time, the enormity of this database is mind-blowing. And I think that, for me, that alleviates a lot of my concerns about getting down to the private individual level.
So we've heard a lot about these NSA surveillance programs with both phone information and working with certain companies, whether or not they are saying they have been working with the NSA, or now some of them are backtracking and saying they haven't been providing access, internet providers and other companies. Is it just luck then? We have these kind of two narratives going on where during the hearing last week, we saw NSA officials say basically what you just said, that there's this enormous database and that we're kind of going through and doing our best to find these potential threats, but also that they've thwarted, 50 or dozens of threats. So, I mean, how much of this is statistics and how much of it is kind of, the humans interacting with this database?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, let's look at that, the 50 cases that they've intervened. I mean, frankly, I was underwhelmed by the severity of the cases that they were talking about. I know we're going to get more information about those, or maybe not we, but the Senate's going to get more information about those today. But I wasn't terribly impressed with what they've stopped from what I could read. I think there's some place in between here, between... I think everybody that I've talked to would be completely comfortable with the following scenario. Let's imagine that they're collecting metadata about your phone calls, and all they're using that for is to see, for example, they've identified, let's just say hypothetically, they've identified some small cell in Yemen that's been directly linked to some egregious terrorist activity. If they're simply taking that database and filtering and finding out who is calling that number in Yemen, and investigating that, I think everybody in the United States would have no problem with that at all. So that's on one extreme. And then on the other extreme, you listen to Mr. Snowden, and he's saying that they're storing the phone calls themselves, and they can dig down and listen into phone calls, and that this could be a terrible violation of civil liberties if people started listening into phone calls. One of my big sources for this is an author named Kurt Eichenwald. He has written a book called 500 Days, and he's had some recent articles in Vanity Fair. He is an insider. He's a journalist. He's an insider in this business, and I trust him. And he says, rightly so, that I think what's great about shedding light on this is that we do have a system. It's through the FISA Act and the courts that the NSA has to go get subpoenas to get this information. Have there been any abuses of that? Probably. I don't know. Probably there have. I also worry a little bit about what I think some people are calling mission creep, and that is right after 9/11, the Bush administration, of course, wanted to have all sorts of powers to do things, and they often stepped over the line. And what they would do when they stepped over the line is get Congress to increase the abilities legally. So these FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Acts, came into being, and they get revised every so often, and the powers keep growing. And I think that's a concern. I think we need checks and balances in order to keep this under control, because in theory, collecting all this information, our storage could grow to the point where we could store this, and I could imagine abuses. But today, I'm not worried. There are a lot of protections in place. There are significant restrictions about how information can be used. And so I'm generally not worried. I mean, the IRS is another example. For heaven's sakes, we send a lot of information to the IRS, and you don't have IRS employees just randomly pouring through your tax returns looking for details about your private life that they could then use to cause you trouble. That's illegal. And it's illegal for the NSA to do this kind of digging deep and rooting out horrible things. I think Kurt said, you know, they're not worried about you sharing your recipes with Aunt Mildred. They really aren't. Even if they had that capability, that's not their business. That's not what they're trying to do.
Sure. And I feel like there were two kind of lines of reaction when the Edward Snowden information came to light, which was, one, people were shocked and appalled, or two, which is where I think maybe the more cynical among us thought, well, gee, you know, we've seen on television or we've seen throughout, you know, over the years that the NSA and the FBI and the CIA have these capabilities, and, you know, they can track you as you walk if they really please. So, I mean, was any of this surprising to you, having worked with the NSA?
No, and almost none of it was surprising. And one of the amazing things is I was just looking at a discussion on LinkedIn. Of course, I'm in one of the big data mining groups that are on LinkedIn. And somebody pointed out a 2005 New York Times article talking about PRISM and talking about exactly these issues. This is, what, 8 years ago? So I was absolutely stunned. I apparently hadn't seen that article 8 years ago, and it was just verbatim from what the discussion is today. So no, this isn't surprising. Now, I have a good friend, Andreas Wiegand, who's an expert in big data and data mining. And he likens all of our data situation to having windows in your house. He's probably even more optimistic about this than I. I'm a little more skeptical, but he says, look, you have windows in your house. He said people could, as you just mentioned, Patrick, people could, the FBI, the NSA, or just neighbors could sit at those windows and stare into your house and watch your every move. But you sort of trust that that's not happening. What he is pushing for, Andreas, is to get us more access to our own data so that we can make sure that whatever information they have is correct. That's almost a bigger fear than anything else, is having the wrong financial information, the wrong health information. And right now it's very hard for us to get access to that. We'd have to go to specific places, and a lot of times you just can't get it. I can't go to one of these agencies and just say, could I see my credit data and make corrections in there? And he's advocating for more access to that. So there are a lot of interesting sides to this whole data debate.
In that same line, there seems to be a disconnect where, you know, once you make it your identity known on the internet, if you've got any type of email address or social media profile, it seems like you've sacrificed some of your anonymity to use that service. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, this is an age where we've given up a lot of those privacy concerns. Our smartphones are amazing repositories of information about us. And I hadn't even thought of this until recently, but even EasyPass. I mean, we tell them where we're going on EasyPass. We tell them all sorts of information. It's just that the size of this, storing this, even if they wanted to find information about an individual, that's a lot of work to get through these databases. I mean, the question I don't know is whether Verizon whether the NSA is getting it, has the capability of storing actual individual phone conversations. My understanding was we were talking about metadata. I just listened to Edward Snowden again last night, and he was talking about phone calls. I think this is something that certainly should be cleared up. I mean, what are they storing? And that's why I think this is a great debate. I know the Senate is going to be talking directly to the NSA and some generals today about this issue. And I think the more light that's shed on it, I mean, this is for our protection. This isn't something deep and dark down there that we don't know about. This organization exists to protect us. In fact, I'd like, you know, just to set some of the stage, I have to say that, you know, I was a student in the 60s and 70s, and because of that, my own political leanings, I did not take any government support. I did not take any Department of Defense funding for most of my career, and it was only after 9/11 that I decided, when I was invited to the Stanford program, that I decided to take funding through the NSA. And that really changed my mind about a lot of these things. And my sense from working with these guys for 5 years is, you know, that they're doing the best job that they can. I'm not naive. I'm sure that there are problems, and that's why I said I'm thrilled that people are putting as much light on this as possible, but basically they are fighting an enormous battle against data the size of which we can't imagine. We're talking, just think about if there are 100 or 200 million people in the United States, think of how many combinations of phone calls there are between us. I mean, 100 million times 100 million is a huge number, and that's happening every day. And their staff can't, this idea that they can go through this and with algorithms just sort this out and patterns pop out is unbelievably optimistic and naive. It's a really hard problem.